I guess I'll follow Jan. Howdy.
Howdy.
Oh, it works. This is weird to stand before you. There's a lot more people in the room from this side of the microphone. I do first wanted to say thank you, Jan, for your enthusiasm and all the people who put into organizing this event. It's been such a loving, colorful, creative, generous, lots of gifts, you know, generous way of being and celebrating our recovery. And I've been in program for 5 years now. I have lost or released 70 pounds. I've been, thank you. I've been up and down in my program. I've recommitted, and I'm on day 45 of back-to-back abstinence. And I'm just grateful to be here, you know, one day at a time by the grace of God. So I am a storyteller, and where we stand with story is looking to the realm of mythology over pathology, if you would. Looking at storytelling representing the myths, the metaphors, the patterns of our lives. Looking today at a conversation around sacred wounding and how we've shared a lot of our wounds and our healings and how that's part of the human story to give us an opportunity to expand the local story of ourselves to step into a greater story, into a larger story. And it's through the wounding, through the piercing of the egg, that life comes forward, through the splitting of that seed, that a sprout comes forward, and to honor the sacredness of our wounds and the sacredness of our journey through story. This instrument, by the way, a couple of people was asking me, it's an African thumb piano, and I'm playing it with my thumbs. It's a gourd. I forgot to introduce it in a program I did the other day, and this woman came up to me. She said, well, let me see how you wind that thing up. You know? So just for the record. Once upon a time, there was a black Nubian woman who moved through the village with grace and dignity and beauty. And she wore a white caftan and carried a basket on her head as she moved through the village. And it was a tradition among the women to create necklaces of jujube. And she had created for herself one of the most incredibly beautiful necklaces of them all. And she could hear the women as she moved through. And they were whispering because they were jealous of her necklace. And they had committed that somehow they would have her to lose that necklace or to get it from her. Yet she went about her work. On Friday was wash day, and the women would come down to the river to wash their clothes. And when she came down on that day, they had already gathered and washed their clothes, and they were hanging on the baskets, and they were playing in the water and splashing each other and waiting for their clothes to dry. And one of them said, won't you join us? Come, join us. And the black Nubian woman hesitated at first, and then they said, look, we know we've been unkind. We know we have not been friendly. Please, we want that to change. Come, join us. And so she thought to herself, what a good day to be reconnected with my sister circles, because her heart was heavy. She wasn't sure what was the source of this dissonance. And so she came into the water, and then she noticed none of them had on their necklace. And she said, well, where did you put your necklace? Because I'd like to put mine there too. They said, oh, just this morning, we made a ritual to Yemaya, the goddess of the river, and we threw our necklaces in as an offering. And she said, oh, what a great thing to do. And she took off her necklace. And with a great prayer, she tossed it into the water. And it went down, 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 down to the bottom of the river. And then they began to run to the bushes and reach down and pull out their necklaces and rinse them off in the water. And they said, are you crazy? Do you think we would do such a thing to throw our necklaces in the water? And they laughed and they splashed her and they celebrated their great coup. And they folded their clothes in their baskets and they returned to the village. Now the black Nubian woman, she sat near the side of the river and she wept. And she got up and she began to walk along the river and she wept and she prayed to Yemaya, to the goddess of the river, to return her necklace. And she sang, Yemaya Sesu, Asesu Yemaya, Yemaya Sesu, Asesu Yemaya, Yemaya Olodo. Olodo Yemaya, Yemaya Olodo, Olodo Yemaya. Plunge in. And she thought she heard some words. She said, it must be the gurgling of the river. Plunge in. But then she said, no. And she listened, and sure enough, it was coming from the river. Plunge in. And without hesitation, the black Nubian woman dived into the river. And she went down, 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 down to the bottom of the riverbed. And then as the mud began to settle, she saw before her, 12 feet before her, an old woman who was sitting gap-legged on a stool, whose hair was dancing wildly in the water, who was covered from head to toe with pussy, oozing sores. And she said, lick my sores. Lick my sores. And the black Nubian woman, she looked at the old woman, and she dropped down on her knees and she began to crawl hand and foot until she got the 12 feet to that old woman, and she picked up her hand and she began to lick one of the sores on the back of her hand. And the strangest thing happened. The sore began to shrink and to dry up, as did all the sores on her body. And then she took on this luminous kind of light in her face. And then they heard footsteps. She said, oh, it's the old demon of the riverbed. Quick, quick, under my riverbed skirts. It's the old demon of the riverbed. Quick, quick, under my riverbed skirts. And she took her skirts open and she pulled the black Nubian woman down and she covered her up. Just as the old demon came, he said, where is she? I smell a young maiden in my river. Where is she, old woman? And she said, old demon of the riverbed, you'll never catch her. She's gone 2 hours from this place. You will never catch her. And he began to run until they no longer heard the footsteps. And then she pulled back her skirts and she helped the Nubian woman to stand before her. And then she reached down, down, down into the depths of the river and she pulled up the most incredibly beautiful necklace you ever did see. It had gold and diamonds and rubies and lapis lazuli and tiger's eye and emeralds, and it was the most exquisite necklace you ever did see. And she stood before the woman and she delicately put it on her and she said, "Thank you. Thank you for your compassion. Thank you for being willing to heal again." And then the old woman, she clapped her hands and it tossed the black Nubian woman out of the river and it landed on the side of the river. And then she clapped her hands again and out of that foam came a white basket. And then she clapped her hands again and it was a beautiful white captain that came and laid in the basket. And one more time she clapped her hands and that rushing, rolling river slowed down to a soft gurgle. And the black Nubian woman, she wrapped herself in her white caftan and she felt her necklace and she put her basket on her head as she began to walk along the river. And when she looked in the river, she saw her reflection. She saw the soul of the woman that she was. She saw the soul of the woman that she was. She saw her soul. And then she heard laughter. It was the women coming to wash their clothes. It was Friday again. And when they saw her, they danced around her. "Whoa, look at this dress you have. Where did you get that? Where have you been? Where are you?" And being the woman that she was, she pointed to the river and began to tell them what happened. But before she could finish, she said, "But wait." Kush, kush, kush. They all jumped into the water and they went down, 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 down to the bottom of the riverbed. And when the mud settled, they saw 12 feet before them an old woman sitting gap-legged on a stool whose hair was dancing wildly in the waters, who was covered from head to toe with pussy oozing sores. And she said, "Lick. And they all huddled together and they said, "Oh, isn't that the grossest thing you've ever seen?" And then they heard footsteps. It was the old demon of the riverbed. And he said, "I smell a maiden in my riverbed." And he gobbled them all up and he gobbled them all up. And their bones rose to the top of the river. And the black Nubian woman folded her clothes and put them in her basket and placed it on her head and returned to her village in a time where they say the people live well and they died well. The necklace. Thank you. So I just want to take a moment to peel that back for a little bit. Just kind of look into my own experience, and also have some compadres in the room who helped me kind of workshop the story to tie it into our theme and into our experience of recovery. And I guess I'm curious for you, when did you enter the story? You know, when did you connect? Of course, a black Nubian woman, we probably all have our own vision of her, but of course she would be beautiful and represent the grace and the dignity and the beauty and the mystery of each of us. And this conversation of the women gossiping, you know, pss, 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 I want to, you know, when we're in this conversation of cleaning up our side of the street, and also in this conversation of story, looking at patterns. So I'd like to invite you to consider every character in this story as living in me, as living in you. Because we're in this conversation of cleaning up our side of the street, right? So if all these voices lived inside of us, that pss, 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 you know, where do we go in our own experience to see that? Those internal voices of diminishment. You know, those, and for me, I call it my misfortune teller. You know, that something's going to be wrong. You know, it doesn't matter how much success I'm standing in or whatever opportunity, there's always that voice of diminishment. But, you know, you're not all of that, you know. And then the whole idea of the sense of isolation, of not fitting in. You know, how many of us have stood to this podium and said, I never quite felt like, I mean, I was 6 foot tall in the ninth grade. I mean, I was taller than my first grade teacher. Now, she was Asian, Miss Oka, but still, you know, so, you know, I wore a size 9 shoe when I was 9 years old. So, you know, I've had that experience of being outside. And then just to look around this room and not see many women of color come through, you know, sometimes can feel isolating. And, you know, I mean, people are always polite. If I call, they'll call me back. But, I mean, really, there's just like a handful of people that really kind of check in, you know, that I can continue to develop relationship. But it's also a choice. Like, I'm here for recovery. You know, I'm here, you know, to do the work of recovery. But what lengths will we go to be included? So when she went down to the river, they said, oh, come and join us. You know, intuitively, she knew. You know, now, they haven't been, you know, the most reliable here. But how many times in our own journey, you know, are we, you know, disregard our intuition? And when we continuously to disregard our intuition, we become instinct injured, not to trust ourselves. But also, at what length will we go to fit in? Her most prized gift or her most prized possession, she was willing to throw into the water in order to be a part of the group. For me, my most prized possession is my abstinence. And I can't tell you how many times I was willing to give it this fragile experience. I mean, I've had a long journey in this journey for abstinence. And what I've been willing to sacrifice to be a part of the group, because we were at the wedding. Well, yeah, it's a wedding. Just take one sip or just take one bite. Or, you know, it's the family barbecue. You think you're not good enough to do the barbecue. Oh, you don't, you know, what you're willing to give up to be a part of the group. And to, you know, blindly rely on those who've not earned your trust. Girl, what you doing in OA? For why you thin? Why are you standing up so I won't look like you? You know, no. 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 But then that plunge in, you know, hearing that call, plunge in, you know, answering the call of spirit to do new things, to take the risk, to trust another possibility. When I first came in the program, I had a sponsor who I lovingly call a Nazi bitch. And she said, you know what your most important thing right now is, you take, I was in graduate school, I had been accepted to graduate school, and I paid my money, I passed my tests, I did my prerequisites, and I was doing a master's degree in psychology at Naropa up in Boulder, and she's like, you know what, you might need to consider putting that on hold, you know, at least for this next year, this next 2 years, so that you can really get grounded. And I really bucked against that, but, you know, I did. And also, I sacked the long-term relationship, and as it turned out, later I found out I had ADD, I had attention deficit disorder, and I judged, had I been trying to kick out all those papers and doing all the pressure that master's degree requires, that I would have been fat off into the food in ways I know not of. But just to being willing, and then to go down, down, down to the bottom of the riverbed. What does that mean, to hit bottom? To really come face to face with our disease. And for me, food has had a lot of different meanings for me. It's been a healing source, because I've had uterine fibroid tumors. I've gone through cancer, and I've chosen to do a natural intervention. And it has also to do with using food as healing medicine. you know, 100% raw vegetarian, being, you know, and, but in the face of that, also have this place where I came from, you know, my mother declares herself as the last of the dough girls, you know, and in my family, they say nothing says loving like something from the oven, you know, they say, you know, and then I come from a, you know, grits and gravy, southern fried kind of family, you know, and so that element is there too, but I had this thing in my mind that somehow if I didn't do, you know, the cheap snacky wackies and paid big money for blue chips instead of regular, or, you know, if I paid money for its brand, or, you know, it's got spelt, or it's got, you know, and I don't know if you say food in here, I don't want to go there. Okay. So what I had to come to grips with, even though it's like bran muffin and a fruit smoothie or it's tofu-y, it's still ice cream and cake. It's still ice cream and cake. So I had to... So to try to find a balance and really come to bottom that there are some foods, and I have a lot of allergies, and some foods that I can't eat, that I can never eat, that will trigger me no matter how many ways I've done it. And I thought if I was allergic to peanuts, if I did organic peanut butter, it would make a difference. Not. But that was part of my journey in coming face to face with my disease, and it's not pretty. And that conversation of lick my sore. You know, I judge that the old woman in the bottom of the river was really, you know, once we surrender, you know, that she's saying, now that you've come home, now that you've come to the bottom of your riverbed, is you've got work to do. Lick my sores. It's time to do the work of healing, and it may not be pretty. So to drop down on her knees, which is what I literally had to do, to drop on my knees and ask God to help me. I don't know how to do this by myself. To absolutely surrender and to be willing to crawl. The freedom from self-reliance. And to crawl 12 feet, which I judge were the 12 steps. And in the rooms, I've heard that I'm just one bite away from a binge, but I'm 12 steps away from the bite. So to be willing to go those 12 steps. And she took the back of her hand and she licked the sores. And the strangest thing happened. They began to shrink as if all the sores in their body. Licking the sores. I saw your face. I wish you could be up here to see your face this time. But where in your world, in our world, have you come to that place of incomprehensible demoralization? That place of being willing to look at how compassionate are we with our own wounding. Now, what are your judgments or humiliation or repulsion toward that truly obese person? Especially if it's me. Where is our, you know, sense of finding your face in the toilet or moving through a food hangover? Or the disappointment of breaking my word to myself again and again and again. Where are we willing to have compassion for ourselves and our journey? Thank you for your compassion, for your willingness to heal again. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. We were all asked to do things that we thought we couldn't do. You know, I had to weigh and measure my food, surrender to God. I weigh and measure 3 meals a day. I write it down. I give it to my sponsor. I call it in. I commit, and I eat only what I committed. And I'm coming to this meeting today to help to build a defense against the first compulsive bite. All the sores dried up. When we begin to heal in one area, begin to heal in all the areas. When I was able to make some kind of boundary around my food, I noticed that other areas just kind of began to show up with a little more order. I was just willing to fold those clothes out the basket and put them in my drawer instead of living out the basket. I mean, they're all clean. What the hey? But to begin to see that when we begin to heal in one area, that the promises can begin to come true, and that's what I'm committed to. So the demon of the riverbed, who was that? You know, anytime something new or innocent or life-giving changes, it seems to me like the opposite shows up to test us, to challenge us. And that demon, to me, showed up as a disease with all the conversation, with all the lies, with all the insanity that that makes it difficult to maintain my abstinence. Well, I did well when I traveled last week, so now I deserve a treat. Or this is too hard. Or just, you know, one bite won't hurt. Or I can't count on myself. Or the lie sometimes I heard this disease referred to as like an abusive lover. You know, it's like, come on, baby, you know I love you. Smack. But quick, under my riverbed flirts. Who protects us when we surrender to the disease? When we surrender is when I've actually found, and I'm still struggling with this notion of the higher power, but the God of my own understanding, that was the same source, and when I surrendered, that had the pussy sores and gave compassion, became also the God of my understanding that protects me. And quick, under my riverbed skirts, I've been told that abstinence is at the end of my hands, that we have choices to pick up Mr. Knife or Mrs. Fork, or to put my hands together and pray, or to write, or to make a phone call, or to be open to suggestion, or to reprogram my thinking. And to reprogram my thinking to think that this way of life, weighing and measuring my food, is not one of deprivation, but is the possibility of freedom, the possibility of structure and nourishment that would give me access to living life fully and living a life I love. And when she said, thank you for being willing to heal again, the necklace was a necklace that came beyond her wildest dreams. Yeah. Thank you. And when she clapped her hands, she saw that, you know, she was going to, when she walked along the riverbank and looked at her reflection in the river and saw the soul of the woman that she was, that she knew at that point that she was going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And that we transform. Anytime you do some deep work, she had to have a different dress. That's how I got that dress to wear on the cruise, because of Jan. She gave me her leftover caftan, and it began to be a new thing. And I really was surprised. I am 6'1", and I'm like, you know, come on now, baby girl. I don't think this is going to work, you know. But I promise you, it was long enough. It was beautiful. It was graceful. And it was just one of those miracles. And that we are transformed, and we do need new clothes. So, and the women who, they went to the bottom of the riverbed, but they went to, for all the wrong reasons. And when you go to the riverbed and you're not willing to do the work, we're standing in the face of a disease that's cunning and baffling. And I know for me, there's a part in me that would have me dead, that actually have me dead. But the bones coming up are just enough to not have to live in my past, but to remember, and to remember that that's not where I want to go back to. And when the women, it was wash day, when they asked her, she told them what happened. To extend the hand and the heart to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. She was free. She was standing in the freedom from blame. Because many want recovery, but are not willing to do what it takes, and are overcome by this disease. So she returned to the village, going to know a new freedom and a new way of being, and hopefully to live the promises happily ever after. So.